Welcome to Unbreak My Chart, the podcast that takes a top 10 and talks about it at school the next day. I'm Laura Snapes.
And I'm Fraser McAlpine.
How are you, Fraser?
I'm really good. I went to see the Guardians of the Galaxy movie this afternoon, and I was really interested to note my own physical reaction. As a father, I've acquired the rights to fall asleep in the cinema. I think that's something that happens when you become a dad. It's awesome. And so what I noticed was that whenever the action sequences were happening and they put them to the soundtrack of a 70s soft rock classic like Mr. Blue Sky or The Chain by Fleetwood Mac, I was attentive and paying attention and almost more slightly emotional about what was going on, more emotionally invested in what was going on than I was otherwise. And whenever it was your normal action movie orchestra stabby type music, I just would start nodding off. And I was having the kind of nodding off that if you were driving a car, you'd think, I need to pull in and just stop for a minute, because you know that kind of fraction of a second nod off. I was doing that in the middle in the middle of Guardians of the Galaxy. So I think the next Guardians of the Galaxy, just for me, they just need to edit in more 70s pop rock stuff, and I'll be happy as Larry.
I do think those films have got really great selections of music in them, but I don't know why this annoyed me so much. So I sometimes watch a brilliant video rundown that somebody puts together, a YouTube user called Marco23, who does a proper chart show type rundown of the American albums chart, which is really is great. It's well worth looking up. And when the first film came out, the Guardians of the Galaxy 1 Ultimate Mixtape Soundtrack, or whatever it is, because compilations count towards the American Albums Chart, it was in the chart for so long, and it had the most kind of like generic classic pop and rock songs on it, and it made me so annoyed that this song was so that this album was so eternally popular. Like, why are people buying this really, really generic compilation? I don't know why it bugged me so much, but every time I go in the supermarket, because my local Sainsbury's has started doing vinyl, I see the second volume and imagine the same thing must be happening.
I mean, I'm not particularly sold on the vinyl revival anyway, but the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 soundtrack on vinyl, just go and buy Fleetwood Mac Rumours and The Best of ELO. Go, they're available on vinyl. These things were released on vinyl. That's part of it. What the hell?
The Guardians of the Galaxy 2 soundtrack probably costs you, what, like £18 new on vinyl? You could pick up a whole album of every band that is on that soundtrack probably for a pound each in the local record, in the bin of your local record shop.
Exactly. These weren't obscure records. Some of them were more obscure than others. No, what I failed to do at the beginning of that was ask how you are, Laura, because you also have a story. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I'm incredibly achy. I did a run for charity this morning and it was great fun. It was sponsored by Heart FM or something. It was in Leeds, and at the first little inflatable tunnel thing that we went through that was blasting out Heart FM, they were playing Galway Girl, which I only assumed that they had majestically timed for me to be running through that at that exact moment to kind of like speed me up to make me get away from it. Me and my friend did sing along and it was quite nice. But also brilliantly, at the end of the race, about half a kilometre from the end, they had the Leeds Women's Rock Choir, who were a formidable group of ladies. And I don't know if they were just singing this part of Bohemian Rhapsody over and over, or if we just ran past at the perfect moment, but we ran past when they were singing Don't Stop Me Now, and it was like, yes, we've got half a kilometre to go, this is great.
Then you follow that with Don't Stop Believing and Don't Stop by Fleetwood Mac and just all the other songs that are called Don't Stop. There's even a Red Hot Chili Peppers one, which they can just miss out. That's fine.
Yeah, the middle-aged ladies of Leeds doing like scatting. Just to say thank you to everybody who is listening and also who's been leaving us reviews on iTunes. It really does help. So if you've been intending to leave one and you haven't done yet, please do. We're going to be doing a special podcast about the contenders for Song of the Summer 2017. So please email us your suggestions for those as well. It's unbreakmychartpod@gmail.com. And the more international, the better. Also, if you've been listening over the past few weeks, we have been alighting on interesting collaborations between British no-marks and people who are actually quite famous or certainly went on to be, such as Coronation Street actor Matthew Marsden and Destiny's Child single from 97, 98, was it something like that?
That's right.
So if you can remember any more of those, please send them in, because they are always a delight to hear.
Excellent.
So this week we are going to leap straight into the top 10, which is very samey, with one very major exception that we will get to when it comes up. So, Fraser, do you want to kick off?
Well, before we start, I have a complaint to make about the listening public. Bad Liar by Selena Gomez, which for my money the best pop single in flipping ages, isn't even in the top 40. It was in the lower reaches last week. It's now at number 53. What the hell is going on? And if you think, oh well, you're just being partisan about your own favourite song, Fraser, nor is Cut to the Feeling by Carly Rae Jepsen, and everyone said they liked that. So what's going on? What the hell is wrong with you people? Buy, listen, download, do the we need to do campaigns, which we will come up to in a minute, to make the songs that are any good be at the top 10 end of the charts. Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? I don't know. What is the point otherwise?
I mean, I'm not surprised that Cut to the Feeling isn't in the charts, because that has been, although it's just coming out now because it's in a kids film that's being released in America, that, so in America and Canada, the film is called Leap, but here it's called Ballerina, and it already came out in like December. So I understand why Cut to the Feeling isn't really being pushed. I don't even know if they're playing it on like Radio 1. But Bad Liar, like, that seems very surprising.
It's wrong. It's just wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. I can't overemphasize how wrong it is. And I was listening to a playlist this morning, which I didn't realize had Bad Liar in it. And it made everything else sound awful on either side of it, including some of the songs we're going to be talking about later. So, you know, the magic it has is still working. And I've gone beyond thinking that this is just a personal relationship that I have with the song. I think it's empirically magical, and that you're all not pulling your weight in making it go up the chart.
I will pledge to play it at least once a day, just so you know, up it a Spotify play count fractionally. I mean, it's especially more insulting when you consider that at number 10 this week is Attention by Charlie Puth. I just want attention. You don't want my heart. Maybe you just hate the thought of me with someone new, huh? Yeah, you just want attention.
Now, Laura, please, please, please tell everybody your Charlie Puth story from this week, because it made me laugh and laugh.
I can't remember. I think I was listening to the radio just at home. I can't remember why I would have been doing that, but it was on. And I was thinking, yeah, I quite like this Charlie Puth song, actually. It's really catchy. I'm really enjoying it. So I tweeted at Fraser saying something like, I must confess to you that this song has crept up on me and I really liked it. And then the song finished and the DJ back announced it as the Shawn Mendes single. So it turns out I don't like the Charlie Puth single, and both of these men are exactly interchangeable.
It's an amazing revelation where you're like, no, I'm really getting on board with it. Oh no, it's a song I know or I already like and have spoken publicly about already liking.
I mean, it really says something about how bland those songs are that I listen to them once a week for the purposes of this podcast and I can't even remember what they are.
And this moves us on to our number 9 position, because speaking of songs that all seem to sound like that, it's the daddy of them all. It's Shape of You by Ed Sheeran. I'm in love with your body. I'm in love with your body. I'm in love with your body.
The idea of calling Ed Sheeran the daddy of anything makes my skin crawl, but point taken.
One day he'll be the daddy of something.
Oh God, yeah, he bangs on about it enough in that album. All he wants to do is marry and spawn.
Whatever generosity of spirit you developed over the weeks from listening to all that Ed Sheeran has clearly vanished. You've run it out of you this morning.
Yeah, well, you know, we had to try really hard last week to be really nice about everything, so all of the bile is back.
It's snark week. What's at number 8?
At number 8 is Mama by Jonas Blue featuring William Sange. Like, talking about Ed Sheeran being the daddy of everything, this is just Shape of You with different words. Like, this and the Liam Payne song, they're all just variations on a theme. And I was having a chat earlier with somebody about how album cycles work at the moment, which doesn't really pertain to this single, but it did remind me of it. Especially at the moment when, if a big artist release an album, several of those songs might go in the chart all at once. How do you promote singles after that? And I thought, apart from perhaps the very top tier of pop artists, people like Taylor Swift and Lorde, for example, people who are more artistic about what they do, artists don't really come and go in cycles like they used to. You don't have a period where somebody's around for a couple of years and then disappear. I feel like everybody is around all the time, and careers currently are less about distinct periods of work, but more just about ticking the box of whatever the prevailing aesthetic is at the moment. Somebody like Pharrell would be a good example of that. And also Justin Bieber. You're not working to albums, you're just kind of like hopping on trends, putting your stamp on it, doing it very successfully, and then moving on to the next thing. And yeah, I mean, this doesn't really apply so much to Jonas Blue, who I barely knew before, apart from that terrible Fast Car cover. But yeah, Bieber, maybe Lady Gaga releasing The Cure after Joanne flopped. It seems like labels are having to work artists and work albums in really different ways now.
Yeah, and it's fascinating because, I mean, specifically applying that theory to this song has all of the dominant pop sounds of nowadays mm-hmm. in it. It's got the ghosty noise that is in flipping everything.
Oh, yeah.
It's got the Trop House beat, you know, only this one is slightly more pronounced. It doesn't have the minimalism. It starts to bring in actual real drums, but really, it doesn't, you know, there's not enough in there to make you say this is entirely different to everything that's gone before. There's nothing, literally nothing here that isn't already in some other form in the top 10 even. It's not even in the charts. To even comment on it, it sounds like you've completely no idea of how pop music always works, because it's always been, you know, when it was Merseybeat, it was everybody sounded like Merseybeat. But it's really interesting to watch these songs come in, and nobody involved in making these songs is wrong. I mean, they're absolutely correct. Jonas Blue can't empirically say that they've done anything wrong by making this song sound exactly like everything else, because it's at number 8 in the charts. Mm-hmm. People are going, I want more of that noise with that ghosty noise over it, and with those, that's, you know, that slightly tropical feeling to it. I want more of that now, all the time, as a kind of homogeneity of sonic terrain in which to put my mind. That's what I want. And they're right. So the listeners are right and the bands are right. The only people who are wrong are the critics, and that's us.
Well, yeah, I mean, like you say, you know, big bands and big sounds have always spawned imitators. And for anybody who hasn't watched it, I was watching The Story of Top of the Pops 1984 last night, which has got many interesting examples of this and was a great documentary that I really recommend. But maybe it's just the blandness of it that it makes me think that it's something that's really, really specific to streaming. I don't know. I would need to think about it a bit more to be able to come up with a coherent argument. But, like, I think there's something different between there being one band that then everybody tries to copy, and there being one sound and everybody wanting to kind of make their contribution to it because they know it's kind of algorithmically favourable.
I suppose it's not. Like, I always think of that when you go through albums of big rock stars in the 70s, there's a point at which they all felt the need to address the elephant in the room that was reggae. So Led Zeppelin did a reggae song that was called Jamaica, as in Dear Maker, as in, mm-hmm. you know, no, she went of her own accord, that joke. And Elton John did one that was called Jamaica Jerk Off. And it's just always that thing where, like, we have to call the song after something to do with reggae or Jamaica, just to make it clear that they're addressing this reggae thing because it's really popular and people like us to keep up with the sounds. And it always sounds a little bit like they were forced into it, or that they, you know, that they just wanted to appear with it, with the kids or something. It doesn't ever, you know, because of the naming and the kind of jokey quality of their commitment to that noise. Unlike someone like, say, Paul Simon, who would just write songs and would absorb any rhythmic feel that seemed to be interesting him at that moment. So there is a moment where you're like, oh, I can spot the difference between the people who are just doing it because everyone's doing it and the people who have picked up on a new thing and want to ride that horsey and see how far it will go.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, actually, because I think, much as I don't particularly care for Shape of You, that is Ed Sheeran jumping on a sound and actually very much making his own thing out of it. But I don't think Tropical House is a sound that lends itself to a great deal of invention, or certainly unimaginative people are the ones who are kind of trying to capitalise on it.
This is useful to think about when you consider what the song that's at number 7 in the charts, which is Symphony by Clean Bandit featuring Zara Larsson. I just wanna be part of your symphony. Now, with Rockabye, Clean Bandit had already done their kind of slightly reggae-tinged tropical song at Christmas. And so they'd got it out of the way during the winter months, and now it's summer, you know, we've moved on to something else, and they've gone back to sounding like they did when they released Rather Be.
Well, this is what I was going to say. Symphony by Clean Bandit has been in the charts for ages and ages and ages. Even though it's a very classic-sounding song, it's the most different to, I think, anything else really that's in the top 10 at the moment. And this would have made a much more traditional sounding, like, big Christmas song. Wait, was Rockabye Christmas number one? It was
it
big. Symphony would have made a much more traditional kind of Christmas number one rather than a reggae tinge song about single mothers. Maybe that's why it's catching on. Like, they're flipping back to what they do sound like, but they're not releasing things when you would expect them to. You would expect the kind of more reggae upbeat song now and this ballady one at Christmas. At number six is Unforgettable by French Montana featuring Swae Lee.
At number five, There's Nothing Holding Me Back by Shawn Mendes. Oh, I've been shaking, I love it when you go crazy. You take all my inhibitions. Baby, there's nothing holding me back. You take me places that tear up my reputation. Manipulate my decisions. Baby, there's nothing holding me back. This is definitely the Shawn Mendes song that is we're talking about now, not the Charlie Puth one. The chorus to this has started to infect my waking thoughts in the kind of pre-waking up moments when a song starts to go around in your head. I've got the bit which is where it all breaks down and you can just hear hand claps and Shawn really giving it some, which is probably a version of the chorus, like a bridge into the chorus, but it's also the chorus. That bit is starting to become wonderful for me. I think that's really kind of great.
Yeah, I think this song could definitely be part of, you know, Ed Sheeran's song Children in the top 10 at the moment, but maybe of all of them it's my favourite one. I kind of like a lot of the, like, especially the Liam Payne song and the Ed Sheeran song. They have really, really smug delivery, but I kind of like the actual forceful yearning in the Shawn Mendes one. He sounds like he's really giving it. He's not just kind of coasting, being like, yeah, I know this is going to be a big hit.
I mean, that's the point, isn't it? If you were to characterise Ed Sheeran's songwriting emotion, it's, don't worry, I may be far away, but I'm thinking of you. Yes. And it's fine, that's an emotion, it's an important emotion in relationships, but sometimes what you want is someone shouting in your face about how they feel, and I sense that there's more of that in the Shawn Mendes than there is in, as you say, in some of the other Ed Sheeran alike songs in the top 10.
Speaking of people shouting in your face about how they feel, this week's number four is Liar Liar by Captain Scar. She's a liar, liar. She's a liar, liar. No, you can't trust her. No, 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 no. She's a liar, liar. She's a liar, liar. No, you can't trust her. No, 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 no.
I mean, the thing with this song is there is a lot to talk about, and we are going to talk about most of it. But first of all, let's just have initial reactions to it as a song. Laura, what did you think?
I think it is a categorically bad song. I mean, I'm not a regular kind of ska listener anyway, but even I can recognise that this is not a good ska song. The chorus is okay, but then the verses are so clunky and ham-fisted. It sounds cheap, it sounds really middle-aged. Also, it sounds a lot like a worse version of Blue Cantrell's Hit 'Em Up style. You know when you get like two songs stuck in your head that sound the same and your brain's constantly mashing them up? I've got that all the time with this. I think it's simplistic, it's obvious, I don't think the words are funny. I don't think it's funny even if you're watching the video where they've tried to sync up footage of Theresa May and various other politicians with their lyrics. And I find it really weird that for a very modern issue that they're tackling, they've gone back to a sound that we associate more with kind of 80s protest songs. Like ska, you know, you imagine they're going for kind of like a Specials ghost town kind of thing. I mean, obviously, like, Theresa May has a lot in common with Margaret Thatcher, but it just strikes me as a really odd combination of like topic and sound. What do you think?
I agree completely. I think it's partly because this is a non-mainstream thing to do, is to write a song directly critical of the current Prime Minister. The last critical song that we had of the government that was really noteworthy was Ill Manners by Plan B, which was an entirely modern song. This isn't to make a particular qualitative judgment, although Ill Manners is a lot better. But hand on heart, there was, in the 2015 election, there was a song by a busking band called Fat Bollard. No, I don't give to the busker. He's talentless and lazy. He's ruining the country. I think he should get a job. Instead, I give my money to Walmart for its tax evasion, Primark for its child labour, Texaco for the next invasion. Don't give a fuck about you. Give my money to the millionaires. I give my money to the millionaires. I give all my money to millionaires, and I don't give a fuck about you. And it was really, really well written protest song. So, and it was also the subject of a social media campaign to get it into the charts to shame the government of the day in the run up to an election. So all I wanted to say really about, but by mentioning that, is that I genuinely enjoy that song as a song. I don't like this as a song, and for all the reasons that you mentioned, it's just not well done. But these things can be done well. The benchmark for any political protest song for me is always Free Nelson Mandela by The Special AKA, which is about as joyous as a protest song as you could hope for, and it offers hope and redemption within the music whilst castigating an awful situation and saying that things need to change. So that's what I'm sort of looking for, but I don't want it to be smug. I don't need it to be we are right and everybody else is wrong, and that's the problem with this particular protest song anyway.
And also, as I learned from the excellent Top of the Pops 1984 documentary that was on last night, Free Nelson Mandela, they did it so surreptitiously that the BBC let them on Top of the Pops because they didn't realise really what it was about at first, and so they were able to get their political message into the mainstream and like kick off a movement, obviously in a way that I don't think you could now because monoculture doesn't exist in the same way. What I can't really understand is why it's so popular, though I do have a theory. Like the British music press loves to ask, where has all the protest music gone? And I get really annoyed by that because there is lots of really nuanced political music being made, and often it's not recognised because it's not four white guys battering guitars and railing at the man or railing at the woman. But I can accept that there hasn't been a big ghost town style political hit in a really long time. Long enough maybe for the concept to have skipped an entire generation of young people who are really used to Radio 1 being incredibly safe, which we're going to get into in a minute, and for them to be potentially surprised and maybe delighted by kind of a catchy summary hit that's all about how the Prime Minister is a liar. Maybe I'm underestimating young listeners, but I just can't think of any other way to explain why this quite bad song has become so popular. Have you got any ideas?
Only in the spirit that it is the hit remix version of all of those cassette boy remixes, you know, like the mm-hmm. David Cameron speech that was set to Lose Yourself by Eminem. This is a version of that that has been made into a formal, proper song, whereas yeah. the cassette boy stuff is definitely just political satire. I think ultimately there is a lot of complexity in this particular situation because the BBC can't be seen to be partial politically, but it runs a chart show that promises to play all of the hit songs, which kind of makes the top 40 ripe for attack by pranksters. So you had the Rage Against the Machine campaign when people were outraged that the X Factor always had the Christmas number one. And they demand the right to have their song heard because it's in the charts. So that's interesting. But on top of that, there's the fact that at the first whiff of controversy, which, you know, which suggests the BBC possibly won't play the song, people rush to hear it. And then if they don't play the song, it guarantees that people are going to want to hear it because there's mischief afoot. There's a possibility for cocking a snook. And people, I mean, if you one thing you know about the British public is they love to cock a snook at figures of authority. So it doesn't even really matter whether the song is any good. All it is doing is playing out this two fingers attitude to the current government, politically something that I'm broadly in approval of, but you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that I want the song to be in the top 10 or I need to have the BBC play it. But I understand that people want to have their moment of, it's the Boaty McBoatface moment, but mm-hmm. for politics. So whichever way the BBC reacts, they'll cop flack. And I've worked with the BBC to do with chart stuff as well. But this podcast is in no way affiliated to the BBC. So any generosity of spirit I'm sort of aiming their way is not out of self-interest. I genuinely believe that they're in between a rock and a hard place on that. And that generally I don't like the charts being scammed by people who are listening to music not because they want to listen to music. I think it's a wonderful thing when people are buying songs and listening to songs because they love them, and I like the chart being a reflection of that. But as soon as it becomes a reflection of I need to listen to this song more often in order to drive it further up the charts, notwithstanding everything I said about Bad Liar earlier on, I don't like that. So while the BBC aren't playing the song, that could also be seen as a big pat on the back for Captain Scar because it generates more opinion and more attention, and more people are going to be listening to the song because they're like, what's this song the BBC has banned, in the same way that they did with Frankie Goes to Hollywood. And what I can say is that the BBC has actually played the song because Captain Scar was interviewed on Radio 4 with Nick Robinson and they played part of the song as part of that interview. So in context, they're more than happy to play it. But the within the chart show, which is the big, you know, the big ripe raspberry at the government, which is what the campaign seems to be about, they aren't playing it, and I sort of understand why.
But either way, it has ended up being an own goal for the BBC. I almost sort of feel like it would have caused them a lot less hassle to have just played it. Because like I say, I was listening to the charts on Friday in the car, and when they got to number four, instead of playing it, they did like a whole Newsbeat report about it. And it was very interesting, and they talked about the reasons that they can't play it, because it would be seen as being preferential to one side of the campaign over the other. But I think they're being really, really overcautious about it. Not only are they not playing it on the radio, but if you go on the chart show part of the BBC website, you can play all of the songs using just like a little button next to their entry on the chart. But the one for the Captain Scar song is greyed out. You can't even play it on the website, let alone hear it on any of the radio stations. And there was footage from earlier in the week of Captain Scar going on maybe the breakfast show or one of the BBC News programs, and he said that he had been told by a producer before he went on air, don't go too hard on the Tories. And a producer has disputed whether that was actually true or not, but either way, as bad as the song is, he has successfully illustrated like the BBC's fear of the Conservatives. And I mean, if you're really engaged in it, it should open up a lot of different kinds of thoughts about it. So as bad a song as it is, I think it's doing a lot of work.
Yeah, and absolutely. And for someone in his position, he's in a win-win-win-win-win-win-win situation. In the same way that Rage Against the Machine were when they were invited to play on Radio 5 live immediately after they got to number one. To my understanding, the producers had said, now when you get to that bit of the song with the effing in, you're not going to do that bit, are you? And they went, no, of course not. Of course we're not. Now, a band in that position, why would they not do that? Why wouldn't they do that? They're playing live on the radio. It will get them incredible amount of attention and praise for not compromising your principles. It will only damage their reputation if they in any way bowdlerized the song and played it, you know, with F you, I won't do what you tell me at the end. So of course they're going to do that, and of course they did, and it caused the exact amount of kerfuffle that you would expect. And same with Captain Scar. You just think, well, obviously he's going to say the producers at the BBC are telling him not to slag off the government too much. Obviously, he's going to say it's an outrage that the BBC has banned my song and greyed out the link on their website. He's got nothing to lose from doing that. He will only help. Actually, in terms of getting his song heard and appreciated by people, which presumably is a huge part of the goal, everything the BBC has done has helped him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm not saying that they're doing it on purpose, but I'm saying if the BBC might be being cleverer than we think, but they might not.
So, at number three this week is the significantly less scintillating Strip That Down by Liam Payne featuring Quavo. Do you feel the same as well? You know I used to be in 1D, now I'm a freak. People want me for one thing, that's not me. I'm not changing the way that I used to be. I just wanna have fun and get rowdy. One Coke and Bacardi, sipping lightly. When I walk inside the party, girls on me. F1 type Ferrari, six kiss me. Girl, I love it when your body grinds on me. Oh, yeah. Baby, you know I love it when the music's loud, but come on, strip that down for me, baby. Now there's a lot of people in the crowd, but only you can dance with me. So put your hands on my body and swing that crown for me, baby. You know I love it when the music's loud, but come and strip that down for me. Yeah, 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 yeah. Strip that down, bro. Love when you hit the ground. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And at number two is I'm the One by DJ Khaled featuring Justin Bieber, Quavo, Chance the Rapper and Lil Wayne, which is still the two. I'm the one. And this week's number one, exactly the same as last week, is Despacito by Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee featuring Justin Bieber. Despacito. Quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído. Para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito. Quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firmo las paredes de tu laberinto. Y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito. So, Fraser, I don't know if you saw this. It may have happened last week when we weren't allowed to say anything bad about anybody. But have you seen that footage of Bieber playing this in a club? He's not kind of performing it. He's more DJing and just grabbed the mic and singing over it. But he forgets the lyrics and he sings, I don't know the words, so I sing Dorito. Have you seen any of this?
Yeah, we did mention it a little bit last week, but we didn't know the full context. So now we know. And I'm just outraged, because the one thing that you would give him credit for is that he found this song, not an unknown, you know, under the carpet song that he's made into a hit, already a billion hits on YouTube by the time he released his version, but he put his full backing behind it, and he has created this international Anglophone world hit. And that's a kind of a great thing, and it is a good song, so there's no complaints about it from that point of view. But you kind of think, that's wonderful, he's managing to bridge these two communities, the Spanish speaking communities with the English speaking communities. But you'll never guess what, Laura, the English speak the Spanish speaking communities are right miffed at what's happened now, because of course if anybody starts speaking in Spanish and just ends up singing Spanish sounding food words, it's the worst kind of cultural appropriation style insult that you can possibly imagine.
He is every teenage boy that you give the benefit of the doubt because you want to believe they can be a better person, and they just prove you wrong again and again and again. I'm curious about what Justin Bieber's end game is, like coming back to this idea that he's not really on an album cycle, he's on a bunch of tracks, he seems incredibly shiftless, but I'll be curious to know what he's up to in a couple of years. He just doesn't seem, he seems to put in quite a lot of work but not really enjoy doing any of it.
No, he doesn't like being a pop star. Absolutely doesn't enjoy it at all. And I think that's one of the prerequisites of being a pop star. You have to at least look like you like it. Let's move on to this week's new releases, and it's a rockist panoply of wonder this week, because we have two new songs by well-regarded people within the indie sphere. There is the new single by Liam Gallagher, which we'll talk about in a minute, but first let's hear a little bit of Everything Now by Arcade Fire. Now, this for me is a true guilty pleasure in that it's quite good, but it should make anybody who really likes the Arcade Fire and really likes this song feel a bit guilty about all the corporate indie giants that they may have sneered at or poked fun at over the years, like such as Keane or Coldplay. And they should make them feel so guilty that they ring Chris Martin and Tom Chaplin and apologise in person. Because there are so many Arcade Fire fans who are like, yeah, no, this really sounds like Chic or ABBA, ABBA playing Chic, Chic ABBA, ABBA, ABBA Chic. Because those are the appropriately cool references to throw that nobody could dispute as being good at pop music. But this has indie chords. This is an indie three chord churnaround. And it's sort of hugely removed from the jazz sophistication of Chic. I get why there's a sort of disco heartbeat underneath it. It's because it's produced by Thomas Bangalter from Daft Punk. And the piano part, which, you know, is sort of ABBA-ish, but it owes far more to Everybody's Changing by Keane than it does to Dancing Queen or...
What a song.
You know, and it... Yeah. There's so many bits of it that I just like, well, if they really wanted to be more ABBA and less indie stars having a bash at pop music, they'd have made the harmonies much better, much broader, and put more of them in there. That na-na-na chant at the end could not sound more half-assed. I mean, they just sound like they've got all the blokes in the band to stand in a line and monotonously do the na-na-na refrain. What was worse about it, from my point of view, is that Arcade Fire get all the credibility in the world, and there'll be people there going, I really praise their new pop direction, and I'm just like, no, I don't praise their new pop direction, because they're not good enough. It needs to be better. Indie bands making pop music should ask themselves exactly what it is that they're bringing to the table beyond the fact that they can play their own instruments. Because if they were, you know, if they're good, if the songs are good, they stand on their own merits anyway. And this is a decent stab at an ABBA type song. It is not the dramatic comeback of a musical giant that has been hailed by some Arcade Fire fans that I have seen on social media. Laura, what do you think?
Well, I was going to say, no doubt Arcade Fire themselves, you can imagine, I mean, everything that I understand about Arcade Fire makes me think they're probably incredibly satisfied with themselves for having done this. I would say, for me, this song is a guilty pleasure because I hate this band. I think they are pompous and pretentious, which I think is a valueless word, but I'm going to use it anyway. They so often mistake saying something about what it means to be human for actually saying something human. All of their songs are really like, oh, make you think, we're so clever. I have, you know, I'm letting this get personal, but I've never heard anybody say a good word about Win Butler. I interviewed him and I thought he was awful. I think some of the lesser known members of the band are nice, like Richard Reed Perry. But yeah, by and large, I am 100% anti Arcade Fire. I liked Reflector, but then I thought the rest of that last album was dreadful, bloated dross. And I imagine that this song is equally going to be a red herring for their new album, which is called... Is it called Everything Now as well, or is it called Infinite Content? Either way, awful titles, both of them. In spite of myself and what I know to be true about the objective awfulness of Arcade Fire, I think the song is quite good. And if it was sung by somebody else with different lyrics, I'd probably really, really like it.
Tom Chaplin. Get Tom Chaplin to do it.
I love Tom Chaplin. That first Keane album is so good. If Tom Chaplin was singing this song, I would be absolutely fine with that. Yeah, you know, I like the fact that it sounds a bit like sad ABBA, which is my favourite kind of ABBA. But yes, I just have the worst kind of premonition that this album somewhere is going to have Father John Misty on it, at which point when that is announced, we will forget that I ever said I liked anything about this song. It should be stricken from the record and the whole album should be condemned to a fiery hell pit.
What we're basically saying is that they should have done a Chop House banger with that ghosty noise on it like everybody else is doing.
Yeah, it's just... It sounds like the chorus, I think, is like quite tender and it stands up to a lot of repetition. Like, it's a long song and it doesn't really do that much by the end. It's kind of, there are moving elements to it, but yeah, it's just his horrible soothsayery lyrics about how disconnected we all are because of technology. They can do one, as can most lyrics about how disconnected we are because of technology. They're mostly awful.
There you go. And bearing in mind, this probably won't be a top 10 hit. This is the only time you'll hear us discuss this song, and we don't like it. Take it away.
Imagine how angry you'd be if that was a top 10 hit and Bad Liar was never a top 10 hit. You'd be furious.
I mean, yeah, I don't know what's... If this is a top 10 hit and Bad Liar doesn't buck up its ideas, there's going to be hell to pay. let's move on to something we're a little bit warmer feeling about. There's a new single by Liam Gallagher. It's called Wall of Glass and it sounds like this. Laura?
I really like this. It definitely, I think it sounds like it could, you know, it's the bridges that gap between like What's the Story, Morning Glory and Be Here Now. It's a bit hoary, but there's still something kind of like slightly nimble about it. It's really heavily produced. It kind of sounds like all those American bands that were trying to sound like the Beatles in the mid 90s. And for all the reasons that I shouldn't like it, the fact that I know, you know, I have no good moral compass here. I'm taking against the Arcade Fire song, especially because I think they're bad people. I think Liam Gallagher is probably a bad person, but I can't help but love him. Even though he's not reinventing the wheel, just something about that kind of like squalling, swaggering guitar part I think is really infectious. I think the vocal performance is really generous. It's purely him. It's exactly what you want. And I kind of like the fact that, you know, even though what you want from Liam Gallagher is the absolute opposite of humility, there is a little bit of humility in this song and the album by the sounds of it, because he has spent years and years and years slagging off pop music, saying that it's the worst thing ever, it's cheap trash. But he, with this album, he's worked with the producer Greg Kurstin, who's responsible for loads of big pop music, like Adele, Tegan and Sarah, everybody, and a couple of other producers as well. Liam Gallagher has gone, I know my own limitations. I am going to work with big pop producers, some songwriters, and it's going to be way better for it because I don't have those skills. And, you know, people like to, you know, lament the demise of the rock star, and we don't have that many great rock stars anymore, but I do think that we would actually have a lot more of them if more of them thought that way, leaving them to like just focusing themselves on the image and their attitude and the delivery and getting somebody else to help them with the music. I don't think there's any shame in that, and we could have a lot more exciting musicians for it. I'm quite keen to see this live. I'm really hoping he does some kind of surprise slot at Glastonbury, because I will be there with bells on.
That's nice. I like the fact that he's brought in people like Greg Kurstin, because clearly the problem that BDI had was that they had no Noel Gallagher in the band. And that's fine. Almost every band has no Noel Gallagher in the band. But you need to have someone who has an approximate set of skills to Noel Gallagher in order to make your band be any good. And so if he's bringing in people who are professionally booked to provide the Noel Gallagher in a musical equation, then he's going to do much better. He's going to do short of actually working with you know, like a Death in Vegas style dance producing thing, which he's done before, or, you know, the Chemical Brothers or something, to really take him into a different direction. If he's going to make that kind of ensemble guitar song, which absolutely suits his voice best, you need someone who's really, really, really good at making songs interesting. BDI didn't have it, and Oasis did, and there we are. But Liam, a product of pure charisma and vocal talent, that is the difference between the Arcade Fire song and the Liam Gallagher song, is vocally, it's all charisma and you know, there's a focal point around the middle of the song in which you're listening to the singer. In Arcade Fire, there's just a whiny voice.
Yeah, I mean, this song, it sounds like it's been written for him as a performer, which you never got the impression of with BDI. It was kind of stodgy and bandy and like a bit too much of a diplomacy. You don't want diplomacy anywhere that Liam Gallagher is involved. This song has been made for him to perform live, and he said that's the whole reason that he can BDI. That's all he wants to do is gig. And BDI, I think they got like a book. It was an interview in The Observer this weekend. He was saying they got a booking at Coachella, but the management said to him that they couldn't actually afford as a band to do it, and they couldn't afford to tour around it. And he was like, well, if we can't do that, what's the point in us existing as a band?
Laura, what is your most streamed song of this week?
My most streamed song, going by the figures and how much I like it, is Perfect Places by Lord, which sounds like this. Only a couple of weeks off the second Lord album coming out, which I'm really, really excited about. I haven't heard it. I think hardly anybody has heard it. They were working on it until the last minute. I really love every song that's come off it, and this one in particular, it's exactly my favourite kind of combination of, like, she sounds really nihilistic, but she's still totally committed to it as a pop song. It's sort of euphoric, but it's also desperately sad. And, you know, she's singing about going to a party, which is like a really generic kind of pop topic, but she does something so great with it. Like, loads of pop at the moment is about people who are going to parties. It makes me feel really old. It's just about hedonism. You have somebody like Charlie X making what she calls beautiful party music, which is just about the high. And I appreciate that might, you know, she might experience nights that way, but I find something a bit one-dimensional about it. It's not that I think that everybody who's going out and having fun and getting drunk is secretly masking some kind of sadness, but I really like all the dimensions that are in this pop song. It's like the party as a refuge, but also a stark confrontation of everything that you're trying to bury while you're there. There's a bit where she sings about all the substances they're taking because they're young and they're ashamed, and it's so stark. And if you go on the website Genius, she's actually done some really, really good annotations of it. There's a lyric in there about where she says, let's kiss and take off all our clothes. And she said, you know, this is a sentiment that comes up in a lot of pop songs, and it's, you know, it's pretty normal. But in a song like this, and in one of my songs, it sounds desperately weird, and that's why I really liked it. And yeah, I think she's great at evoking that feeling of too muchness and feeling trapped. And there's a brilliant lyric in this where she says, hate the headlines, hate the weather, I'm 19 and I'm on fire. And I think of all of the songs that we've heard from Melodrama so far, well, there's three recorded ones and then Sober, which she's played live a couple of times, and there's good recordings of it. She's still leaning into the over-the-top ridiculousness of being a teenager. There's so much self-awareness there as well. And one doesn't undermine the other, really. Yeah, I think this is amazing. Have you been listening to it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and I agree completely. It does that thing that the Miley Cyrus song We Can't Stop did, mm-hmm. which is sound at one and the same time like a party, but also like being trapped in a party and desperately wanting to mm-hmm. go home. And I think that is an incredible sort of emotion to capture, because when you bang those two sort of remote elements together, there are always sort of more deep emotions to mine.
Fraser, what is your most streamed song this week?
My song is similar, actually. It's The Line by Ray. It sounds like this. Now, you may recognise Ray's voice from the Jonas Blue single By Your Side from last year, or more recently from Jax Jones's You Don't Know Me, which is still kicking about at the bottom end of the charts. But I've picked this because it's a companion song to Perfect Places by Lord, in that it is a song about going out dancing. It is a song about the need to exorcise the tensions of the week by going out and doing something hedonistic and fun. But the difference is, in the narrative of this song, they're not in the club wishing they were at home or wondering whether they should go to the club. They're trying to get into the club and they're stuck in the queue. So this is a song about going out raving and not getting in and finding your own moment of fun whilst waiting in the queue to get into a nightclub, which seems like a particularly original way of tackling a party thing. So it doesn't have the smugness of we're in the club and I'm drinking the most expensive drink. And
one Bacardi, sipping lightly.
Yeah, exactly. It's like stood outside wishing I had cocoa, you know, and there's even a bit in the song where they reference having to take the high heels off because the feet are burning and just dancing in barefoot on the pavement. And I just think this is amazing. You know, lyrically, it's great for that. The sort of vivid details are all been put in. And it's a really great evocation of that, making a party happen amid difficult circumstances because it's your only chance to let loose and make that perfect places thing happen, you know, with all of the caveats that come with Lorde's rendition of that same experience.
Fantastic. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. The video is excellent as well. Not that you would know that. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to Unbreak My Chart. You can email us at unbreakmychartpod@gmail.com. Please do tell us about your songs of the summer. As we said, we'll be getting onto them in a few weeks' time.
If you want to listen to any of the songs we've discussed in this week's podcast, we've put the best ones in a Spotify playlist as usual, and it's linked to in the show notes.
And you can find us both on Twitter. Fraser, you are...
@CSI_popmusic.
And I am @LauraSnapes. See you next week.
Bye.